Welcome back to the LuchaCast presented by Yeti, built for the wild. Visit yeti.com to check out gear that'll help you travel farther, camp longer, and live harder. No matter where the wild takes you, Yeti is ready to tackle your next adventure head on. By the way, that's what I'll be doing today right after this podcast, is going to yeti.com to check out gear that'll help me travel farther, camp longer, and live harder. I'm Billy Lucci, joined this week by former Texas A&M golf coach and national champion, now headed to coach the USC Trojans, JT Higgins. Joined now by A&M legend, former Aggie golf coach, JT Higgins. I wish this wasn't what we were talking about today, but we're going to have a little fun and talk about some really good times and some great years ahead for you out in Southern California. So the news broke last week. Let me start, though, first by saying this. If you're listening right now, if I make a comment or two along the way, I don't want anyone. JT, you know I have to deal with the mean narrative because of what Gabe draws out. You know, every day with Gabe, it's kind of like you having to deal with a couple of our friends. Sometimes they will pull the – they will push your buttons and you know, so I'm the bad guy.
They can bring the worst out in you.
Yeah. So I have to be careful now because I'm going to give you a hard time at least once during this thing. And people are going to go, man, he was kind of mean to the golf coach.
I have it coming.
Kind of upset that he was leaving. But I think no one's as upset as you. And also no one's as excited as you. I mean, a tough decision for you. Take us through what went into that, JT, outside of the, obviously it's always a very personal decision to make a move like this. But after 20 years, and I know how much you loved A&M, love A&M, to make that decision, what went into it and why now and why USC?
So, you know, I've always known that when my career was over, I was going to end up back in California. That's where I want to live. That's where I wanted to retire to. And they, you know, the job opened. It just happened to open now. And when I started thinking about it, I thought, man, well, it's now or never. As far as if I want to live there at an age where I can really enjoy it and you know, kind of get started with, you know, I'm not retiring by any means, but you know, go ahead and get in place before retirement and kind of be set for that for the rest of my life. And but it wasn't an easy decision at all. You know, I feel like the A&M golf program goes back 100 years. So I didn't build it, but what it is now, you know, we played a pretty large hand in everything out there, the facilities and, you know, it's an elite program now. And I can say that it wasn't when I took over. And so I'm very proud of that. I'm proud of the team we put together. So it was by no means an easy decision at all. But it was also the other thing is just a new challenge. You know, I feel like everything, we could win more championships at A&M. There's no doubt they probably will with the team that's in place and the kids that are coming. But we've done that here, you know? And so this is a chance for me to kind of reinvigorate and get really excited about coaching and you know, building something new at another place. And also, you know, I've got a little bit of ego just to see if what I do here works there. You know, you couldn't find, you know, College Station, Texas, small college town, and where, you know, USC is in the middle of a giant metropolis. So, you know, I just think there's just lots of challenges and lots of things that kind of pushed my buttons a little bit that worked out. And then it's also going home, and that's where I'm from originally. And my family lives in Northern California. My daughters live in Las Vegas. Everyone's closer, you know, obviously dating Ray Lynn. She lives in Orange County. So there's a lot to it that went into the decision. But at the end of the day, I just thought it was something, the challenge and the chance to do something new really drew me out there.
Hey, JT, I know you didn't move across the country for a girl.
No.
If that was the only reason, you wouldn't be the first person to do that either. So you add that with a whole lot of other reasons there that you mentioned, and I think very important ones.
I've asked myself, you asked me the question when I first told you about it. It was probably the best question anyone asked me, which doesn't surprise me coming from you, but was, if Ray Lynn wasn't in the equation, would you still be doing this? And I've asked myself that 100 times, and the answer every time is yes. It's the right place and the right time for me right now.
It's one of those questions I ask you knowing the answer.
Yeah.
But I just wanted it to separate that. So to me, when you were talking, that I knew the answer to it. I mean, that was what was going through my head was, and JT, I know this, and you've turned down jobs here before, really good ones,
yeah,
to stay here. So, I mean, and the friendships, and like you said, what you've built with the program, and I'm assuming there won't be a bigger fan of A&M golf outside of people wearing maroon and white than JT Higgins moving forward. This is a transition here. I want to talk to you a lot more about USC and what you're walking into and just some memories here, but you mentioned what you guys have built and it isn't going anywhere. And I'm hoping and praying that Corton gets a shot this year to act for there to actually be golf, to see what he can do with this team that you guys have built together. Tell us a little bit about Corton for those that are unfamiliar with him, the role he's played in what you guys have built, and then the team he's going to inherit, because I know a bunch of us here are hoping this is an Ed O type situation, minus all the mumbling and grumbling. but we're hoping this is an Ed O situation where Corton, you know, achieves just ridiculous success early on, and you know, everybody goes, hey, that's our golf coach. That's the guy.
I really think he's the right guy for the job. You know, I know my opinion is not going to matter a whole lot in that going forward, but he is an outstanding coach. First of all, he is great with the physical side of the game, the mental side of the game. He's played at the highest levels. You know, he knows what it takes to make it to the PGA Tour. And even if you don't make it to the PGA Tour, he had a great career of pro golf with only 1 year on PGA Tour. You know, so he's able to show guys that there's a path where you can make a living playing this game, a pretty comfortable living, and without, you know, you don't have to win a Masters to do it. So there's that side of it. He has turned into an excellent recruiter. I trust his evaluation of players, you know, just incredibly. He's usually not wrong when that happens. You know, we all are. We all miss once in a while, but you know, he's pretty dead on with spotting talent, and he's just become really comfortable going after kids and talking to them. And that was something when he started that wasn't a strength, and now it really is. And you know, the only thing that he hasn't had a part in that much is the Aggie Golf Association and our donors. And that's just because I took that role. That was 100%, you know, my baby. I started that, you know, the AGA. And, but I think they're going to find that he's more than up to the task on that. He is witty. You know, he's quick. And, I think the donors are going to love him when they get to know him. So that part will come, and he's got a year to make those connections and to meet all the people that support the program and get in and make sure they stay involved and help. And I don't have any worries about the team and their performance. I'm with you. I'm very worried that we might not play. And if we don't play, then what happens, you know?
Yeah.
Because it is an elite job, and there's going to be some great interest from some really, you know, credible and distinguished coaches that are going to be interested in the program. So hopefully he gets the chance to prove himself before that happens.
Hey, and Corton will talk football too with those donors you're talking about. And yeah. Don't get him started, because he is a big fan and knows what I said before.
He's the golf coach that knows football.
JT, I know you love football. And you love all A&M sports, and we've sat at many an Aggie basketball game over the years and had to put up with Stark's negativity. But the only guy that you can go fall behind 7-2 to start conference play, and he'll predict a 3-15 conference record, and it turns out you go 15-3 and win the SEC or the Big 12 or something.
I think you know, people see me sitting next to the two of you and right in the front row behind the bench, and they think I have the best seat in college sports, and little do they know what I have to do, what I have to tolerate to sit in that seat. So,
right. Yeah. That's one thing though, I can promise you are going to miss. And I know you're going to miss, you're going to get big time, hopefully. You're not going to get it this year, which I want to ask you in a second too, but you're going to get hopefully big time football at USC. And I know you told me you'd already met Clay Helton. I'm looking forward to making my way out there, stay in your guest room and watching the Trojans. I've never been to a game, but I know one of the things you look forward to, just like all of us every year, was Kyle Field in the fall. What are some of your couple of best memories, JT, in 20 years?
Oh my gosh,
Aggie football fan, because it 2 decades, man. You've seen almost as much as me. I mean, you got here about less than 10 years after I got here as a student.
Yeah, I'm. Wow, that's a great question. My favorite is I was on the field when we beat Alabama at Bryant Denny, and I actually got to saw him off with the team. I tell people I had no idea that was on my bucket list until I actually got to do it. So that was pretty cool. And I've been to almost every SEC stadium now, and you know, that's been unbelievably cool. You know, it's funny at Kyle Field. Well, obviously the LSU game. That's probably the 7 overtime or whatever it was. That was insane, and that was so much fun. But really, every game to me is just so. I'm fired up for Saturdays. You know, I can't wait. I can't wait to tailgate. I can't wait to get. You know, I give. You know, we play fall golf here. If we have a home game, I try to give the team Saturdays off. And if we do have to do something, we do it early in the morning so that they've got their afternoons free and they can get over to the game and watch as well. I just think that's a huge part of life here, you know, and great experience. So, but what's funny is up until recently, you know, really what I remember most about Kyle Field is some of the crushing losses, to be honest with you. They kind of stand out more, you know, the last game against Texas is always hard to get out of my mind.
You are an Aggie.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't ever get it twisted.
You know, it's just amazing how many times it feels like we rip defeat out of the jaws of victory. but I like where the team's going. I think it's going to be a force to be reckoned with for a long time. I think Jimbo's doing a great job, and obviously unbelievable talent coming in, and it's really cool to watch.
Let me ask you this: as a coach of a sport outside of football, at a place like A&M, you're going to another place that's I wouldn't compare Pac-12 football to Big 12, but if there's Big 12, oh man, I just did SEC. But if there's a team that when they get it rolling, it's as big time as it gets. It's USC. At places like this, you've been at A&M now for this long. You had come from New Mexico and then obviously a basketball school at UNLV, big time, as big as it gets when you were there. But as a golf coach, whether it's you, whether it's Pat Henry, whether it's Buzz Williams, Joe Evans, Rob Childers, whoever, how powerful is it when you guys are recruiting? I see every sport has those big visit weekends, and you guys walk these kids into a packed Kyle Field, say in 2013, for Texas A&M hosting Nick Saban in Alabama with Johnny Manziel and Mike Evans, and the Aggies go up 14-0. Like, how much does that help Texas A&M athletics? And I'm talking about the players you guys are able to attract to win these championships and build these programs.
Yeah, it's central. I don't know any other way to put it. Every visit is scheduled around a football game. The only time kids come on a visit when there's not a football game is if they tell us that's the only time they can come. Mm-hmm. If we have any say in setting it up, everything's going to be centered around a football game. Get them in. Usually we try to get them in Thursday night, and then the visit starts Friday morning, and we send them home Sunday morning, and then they get the whole experience of the weekend. And the guys are taking them out, and they're experiencing Northgate, and they're experiencing tailgate, and they're, it's such a part. It's what makes this community great and vibrant, and that's hard to match anywhere else. Outside of the SEC, even it was big in the Big 12. Those games. What's cool about A&M is I'll tell you a great story. My first year, 2002, we took the team to Scotland. And it's a week long, and the deal was you took 10 donors with you and every school brought their donors, and the donor base played against each other as well in golf.
Oh, wow.
And so it was really kind of a cool concept. Well, every donor, I had a hard time finding 10 guys to go because it was in September, and it was
a fall wedding.
Yeah, it was a Saturday, and it was a Saturday to Saturday trip. And so they were going to miss two football games. Well, one of them was the Citadel, and the other one was another, you know, Abilene Christian, whoever you want to say, you know, it wasn't a league game. It wasn't like they were missing a big time non-conference opponent. And one of the guys, I asked him, like, he goes, man, that's my dream trip. I've never been to Scotland. I want to go so badly. But I just can't, I can't go. It's football season. And I looked at him, I go, it's the Citadel. And he looked right back at me and goes, no, it's Texas A&M. And so, you know, I was getting the idea pretty quick that football reigns. It's the most important thing here, as it should be. But this guy had dreamed of going. We played the Old Course. We played Carnoustie. I mean, just amazing places to play golf. And this guy was like, nope, I'm not missing A&M versus the Citadel. And so, you know, that's how things are here. And it's awesome that people love the university and the football team that much.
JT, so you built these teams over the years, and football helps and A&M helps, and you had a terrific golf course and facilities. Talk to us a little bit about the team you're leaving behind, as in, you said to me before, these next couple teams, like, it was hard. Part of what made it hard for you to go is you feel like over the next couple of years, A&M is going to have a shot to win it. So twofold there. How tough was it to tell the team? You know, how tough was it to tell your guys, hey, I'm leaving? How'd that conversation go? And then secondly, what can we expect these next couple seasons?
I built it up in my head. I thought it was going to be way tougher than it actually was, because they're great. I think one of the things about college athletes is they know our personal relationship, you know, where we see each other every day, that's coming to an end at some point.
Yeah. Like, usually for them.
Yeah. For 4 years, they're going to move on. New players are going to come in. You know, no one wants it to happen abruptly like it did. But they're prepared for that at some point. Where my friends, you know, that's a little tougher. You know, like we talked about, not going to the movies, you know, not going to lunch and seeing each other all the time. That was actually more difficult for me. But telling the players was tough. I think they were completely shocked, which I'm gonna, not trying to give myself too much credit, but I really made a point. I wanted to do it right, leaving here. Like, you know, you hear the stories of coaches leaving the night and not talking to their team, you know, just disappearing. I didn't want to do any of that. So, you know, I was prepared. I made sure that I let the Aggie Golf Association know as soon as it got announced. They got a letter, an email from us. The team knew before it got announced. And we kept it pretty quiet, you know, so that it didn't leak out and people, they'd find out from somebody else. So I really thought it was important for them to hear it from me. When we gathered together, Ross and Jeff Toole were there as well. And they thought we were going to tell them the season was over, that we weren't going to be allowed to play. Oh, no. So I don't know if they're
like, oh, it's just JT leaving.
I think they were happy. I think they were happy they get to keep playing golf. And so that was pretty tough. This team is amazing. And the only thing I'd say is that by the spring getting canceled, where I thought we had a really good chance to compete for a national championship, and for sure we were the highest ranked team in the SEC, we could have won an SEC last year, was that the players, our seniors from last year, were Brandon Smith and Dan Erickson and Josh Gleegi. Well, if you look at where they fell and our scoring average and where they played in the lineup, they were our fifth, sixth, and seventh guys. So we never, you know, love them. They're great players, don't get me wrong. But our top four were coming back, and we're adding some great recruits. Where other teams for this season, they were losing their best players.
And now they might get them back.
And they're all coming back. And so the teams that we were ranked behind, you know, we were ranked seventh or eighth, all those teams got to keep their best players and bring in their recruits. We added some great recruits to an already great team, which means they can 100% compete with anybody. But I think if it would have been a normal situation, you're looking at a team that probably would have been ranked in the top three or four in the nation to start the season. Wow. But I'm telling you, they're that good. They could easily, you know, they should, they're going to have a great chance at nationals. They have a great chance to make match play. And then, you know, once you get into match play, I think they're capable of beating anybody and they could maybe bring home a title.
Speaking of titles, you guys captured the national championship, really got that thing, got that ball rolling at Texas A&M. That was an unforgettable time. It was like in rapid succession, golf, women's basketball, track and field, multiple ones there for Pat Henry. We've all heard the stories, and I want to ask you about that day and the night before leading into the championship, you know, the final day there. But prior to that season, JT, how did you feel about that team, and what were the conversations that you were having with your, you know, with Diz and your assistant coaches at that time? Like, what was Diz, right?
Yeah. Yep.
What was going, what did you guys feel like that was a championship team prior to the season, or did that even sneak up on you guys?
It snuck up on us a little bit. I thought we were really good. I thought we were, you know, top 10, top 15 team. I thought the 2010 team, so I thought we were a year away, you know, was going to be the one that really had a great shot. And so, and the 2008 team before that, you know, had Bobby Gates and Martin Piller, who are PGA Tour players. They graduated in 08. So I thought that team was ready. And then we lost them. So I thought, man, those are two tough guys to replace. But we came back and, you know, just everyone stepped up and got a little bit better and peaked at the right time, to be honest with you, because we were ranked about ninth in the country going into nationals. So it was a little bit of an upset. You had Oklahoma State and Georgia were, you know, I think both teams had off those teams has like six guys on PGA Tour now. So they were that obviously tough competition. And then the 2010 team was amazing. We were ranked second or third in the nation all year.
Yeah.
And then missed match play by a shot. So that was a disappointing one for us. But the national championship, no, I really once we got into match play though, I had great feelings. I was like, man, we got a shot at this. We can beat these teams, especially the way the draw ended up.
Yeah.
You know, it worked out great for us.
And then the shot.
Yeah.
By Bronson, the shot part two, you know, there's AC Law and there's Bronson Burgoon.
That's right.
Just as a fan, anyone that's a fan of sports to see that celebration it's really an iconic picture. Anybody, any A&M fan recognizes that. And I don't think there are many powerhouse athletic departments where you could show any fan a golf picture and they know exactly what that was. 10 years later now, and you're on your way out west. How much do you cherish that? Not even that day, but just that moment there with those guys and watching them celebrate, a national championship.
It still gives me chills. The pictures up in Traditions in the locker room, and every time I think of it, you know, it chokes me up a little bit. I get excited. All the great feelings come back. So it's you work your whole life for something like that. And for it to end that way, you know, that special, and to have it be, like you're saying, such an iconic moment that everyone's always going to remember is just incredible. And, what's funny is when I was standing beside the green and Bronson was hitting the shot, I was just really terrified he was going to make another bogey. And I was like, all I was thinking about is how am I going to console this kid? I was so worried about him that if he doesn't pull this off, if we lose this thing, he's going to blame himself for the rest of his life. I've got to make sure he understands it's a team, not just him, and on and on. And then the ball rolls up to a couple inches and I was just like, you know, out of my mind. And a little side story, not many people know, but Andrea Pavon was next to me. And so the Andrew Landry conceded the putt to Bronson. But yeah. Andrew had about a 30 footer that he could have halved the hole and sent it into extra holes. And Andrea looks at me and goes, "Coach, what are you going to do if Andrew makes this putt?" And I just looked at him. I had two words for him.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm not going to say them on the air.
Did you say it in Italian? Or?
I wish I could. He just smiled.
I know that one. I have four grandparents that spoke Italian. I know how to say that. So. You could say it on the podcast, but it comes with a little of this.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
Well, JT, now you're going to a place you're going to try to win another one. And for anyone that might be listening, or we might clip this out for, you know, for the USC fans and the program you're walking into. And you talk about some really unique and cool challenges, but what do you know about that team and how they're positioned for you guys to be an overnight contender in the Pac-12, or even, you know, even in for a championship, which is the ultimate goal, obviously.
There's a lot of talent on the team. Obviously, I haven't watched them play a ton. We've been paired with them a few times over the last couple of years, but they're really a talented squad. We have our best player is Yushin Lin, who's from China, and he's playing in the Masters this year. He's won the Asia Pacific Am the last 2 years. Wow. Just tremendous guy. And then really it's not as deep as A&M, you know, if I'm honest, but the top guys they can compete. So,
yeah.
You know, we're going to get to work and go. I think though, I mean, if they buy in, I think that if we get to play, I think we can get them where we're competing for the Pac-12. And in golf, it's just like the SEC. If you can win the Pac-12 championship, you can play with anybody. And so that's the goal, is to go compete for the Pac-12 first and then get into nationals and give it a shot. But it's a good solid group of guys, and I just think that they need a little bit more toughness, a little bit more discipline, you know, just things why they hired me. I mean, really, they want them, you know, they just want them to be a little bit more competitive.
JT, I'm going to ask you this. Your story is so fascinating. And I just think in any line of work, I mean, I don't care if you're a college kid coming out of school or if you're a coach in another sport, your story is fascinating to get to where you are to this point today. You know, getting to go home, getting to go coach at a you know, one of the premier golf programs, leaving one of the premier golf programs that you played a big part in building here, the biggest part. But your story is incredible. I feel like it's like that. People that ask me, tell us about Tex Aggs. Tell us about how you got into this. Tell us how this came to be. It's a story that I'm asked 8 million times. It's the longest, most drawn out story that I get tired of hearing myself tell it. I bore myself telling it, but you have to go. So like me, I'm sure you have formed the condensed yeah. fast version. So for people watching this that haven't heard it, I just think it's fascinating that just the come up and the path you took to get here. So kind of give everyone the Tex Aggs condensed JT yeah. condensed version.
Never played competitive golf and still don't play very much golf. If I can avoid it, I try to stay off a golf course. It's not pretty to watch either.
You're like the Mike Leach of golf.
Exactly. There you go. And so anyway, I wanted to be a general manager of a baseball team. And I went to the U.S. Sports Academy to work on my master's in sports management, got hired by a AAA baseball team in Las Vegas, Las Vegas Stars, to do PR. And mm-hmm. I thought that's a great place to start. Within about 6 or 7 months, UNLV called and they wanted me to interview for the sports information director job. And I was only 24 years old. I would have been the youngest sports information director in the country by far. And met Coach Tarkanian. It was at the end of my interview. I was crushing it. He looked up and said, he's too young. And that was it. That was the end of my time. Well, the guy they hired came and hired me to be his assistant. And I did football and basketball, which was with the team that was undefeated, went to the Final Four and lost to Duke in 1991. And I had to pick a spring sport, and I wanted baseball. They said, no, your choices are golf, softball, or track. I hate running. I didn't really want to do softball, so I just chose golf. It was the best option. And but I treated them like they were the basketball team. You know, I gave them the attention, treated them like they were a big-time program. And at the end of the year, the assistant coach left to go to Oklahoma State to be an assistant coach. And the head coach called me up, and I went over to his office thinking I was doing a press release on the assistant coach leaving. And so I had my notepad out, and he said, what are you doing? And I said, well, I'm going to do something on Bruce. And he said, He said, no, I want to know if you ever thought about getting into coaching. And I told him, golf? he said, yeah. I said, no, it's never even crossed my mind. And I said, I don't want to be a golf coach. And I turned him down 3 times.
Really?
He finally said, how much money do you make? And I told him, and he said, I'll give you a $5,000 raise in a car, which at the time was just huge. I had a wife and 2 kids, and I wasn't making much money anyway. And so I said, all right, I'll give it a shot. And so we, I really thought I'd do it for a year or two and then get back into administration. And the first year, we recruited a kid named Chris Riley, who was a 4-time All-American and ended up making the Ryder Cup team 2 years out of college. The next year, we got a guy named Gilberto Morales, who was the junior player of the year over Tiger Woods. And then the next year, we recruited Tiger. And it came down to us and Stanford to the very end, until the night before signing day. And so once those 3 years of recruiting happened, my reputation as a recruiter grew, and my phone just kind of started ringing off the hook. But it was mostly small jobs, Boise State, San Jose State, things like that. So not anywhere I was going to leave for. And then my boss was great. He used every one of those opportunities to get me a raise. So he would make me go interview. I'd come back, and the AD would come and say, we don't want to lose you over money. And they'd throw a little more money at me. And so pretty soon it made it where I was, this is in the 90s. It was a lot of money for a golf coach then, but I was making more money than a lot of head coaches as an assistant. And then, so anyway, one day John Fields was the coach at New Mexico. He took the job at Texas, and him and my boss, Dwayne Knight, was the coach at New Mexico before him. So I had the two former coaches both telling the donors, everybody, this is who you need to hire. New Mexico called. I actually took a pay cut to go be the head coach at New Mexico. And and I did that for 4 years. And then Coach Ellis called me from here and said he was retiring. And I was one of the names he was going to give the search committee for the job here. And there you go. I just, I jumped all over it. As soon as I stepped foot on campus, I was like, man, I could win here. This place is amazing. And we got after it.
And I want to ask you before we go a couple stories that I've heard from you, but I think they're just fun. Like, give us one great Tark story. and then I'm going to ask you real quick about Tiger. And I think there's a great story about kind of a big part of what got you hired at A&M. But start with Tark, UNLV, running Rebels, Greg Anthony, Anderson Hunt, obviously, Larry Johnson. Who else were on those teams?
Oh, Stacey Augmon.
I used to love Plastic Man.
Yeah,
Stacey Augmon. Right. So, yeah, just an iconic dynasty, we'll call it, in college basketball. One of the – probably that and the U are two of the most, storied, celebrated – since I've been following sports in college, Phi Slamma Jamma, the running Rebels of the early 90s, and then, Alabama football now under Nick Saban and the U. That's it. I mean, you were right there, front row seat. They might not have given you a seat. is there a story there with the Tark that anything interesting?
I'll tell you it was like traveling with rock stars. And one of my jobs, I'm a fairly big guy, I was the wedge that would get us off a bus. We didn't, we didn't have security. So you'd show up at a hotel and there would literally be, hundreds of people. And so I would just go out and just kind of push people out of the way and make a lane for the guys to get into the hotel. And so that was fun. But rather than any basketball stories, I'll tell you my favorite Tark story with me personally is I never thought Coach knew my name. Right. Every time he'd say, you would be a shoot around and say, hey, go shag for Larry. He'd say, hey, you go shag for Larry. OK, so I'd go feed Larry to shoot or whatever. And, every once in a while, I'd be a practice dummy for running plays or whatever. But he never called me by name. So Tark, for every game, because back when he signed his contract, they couldn't afford to pay him to keep him. So they gave him, he had over 200 tickets to every game. And so you knew.
I bet he made so much money off of those things.
But he always handed them off to someone to take up to the ticket office So if you saw him before the game, you tried to avoid him because you didn't want to be the person that had to do that. Well, we're playing in the Sweet 16 in Seattle and in the Kingdome, and I'm walking across the Kingdome floor and it's empty. No one's in the building yet. And I see Tart coming and he's got his envelope with his tickets. And I'm like, oh crap. And so I turn around. I'm like, I'm getting out of here. There, you know what? Even if he yells at me, I'm going to pretend like I don't hear him and he doesn't know my name. There's no way. And so I'm start walking the other way. And the next thing I know, hey, Jimmy. I'm like, you have got to be kidding me. And so I stop. I'm like, yeah, what can I do for you, coach? And he hands me 214 tickets to take up and to the ticket office. And they got to be sorted out by all his friends and the ones he's selling, the whole deal. And I just couldn't believe it. I was like, I've got a whole year with this guy. He's never called me by name and he got me there. So
that's awesome. Yeah. That's awesome. And then you run into him at the Taps 20.
Yeah. That was such a fun weekend when he came for the Oklahoma game and watched Billy Gillespie's team practice. And he was great. I mean, he was awesome to me then. I was glad to be included in that. That was pretty cool.
That's cool. He was an absolute legend. And the towel and everything.
When we went to the tap that night, you know, I thought this guy's, you know, he was retired. He wasn't coaching anymore. I was like, no one's going to know who he is. I mean, we walked in and it was amazing. The response, college kids and were just swarming him. He couldn't get a moment alone, which I think he ate up. I think he loved it, but.
Oh yeah. Well, it is wild. That is wild. That goes to show you the reach he had. And I'm sure other people just saw like, who's that guy that all those old men are talking to and kissing his butt clearly. And in Tiger Woods, I mean, that's you guys, like you said, you finished runner up to Stanford there. Is there anything interesting to tell about that recruitment? And then did you guys really, was there ever a shot point where you said, we can really get him, or did you think he was going to Stanford and you were just going to stay in the ring
I thought we were going to get him after his visit. Okay. So two things. The first one was we actually got a letter from the NCAA telling us to make sure we had everything documented that we were doing, because if Tiger chose us over Stanford, we were going to be the first golf program to go under investigation. They didn't think we could get him without cheating.
Wow.
And so we got a real taste of what football and basketball coaches go through all the time. You know, usually our recruits are kind of under the radar and not many people know when they're here or who's visiting. You know, they might know the names once in a while, but they don't know much more about it. But when we brought Tiger in for his visit, the president of the university, Bob Maxson, had a luncheon at his house. And Tiger wanted to major in business and specifically accounting. And Stanford doesn't offer that. You know, they don't have undergraduate business. So he made the chair of the accounting department, the dean of the business school, and all the accounting professors had to come to this luncheon. And he got up and gave a great talk and said and told Tiger, I believe that college is supposed to prepare you for what you're going to do for the rest of your life. And he said, and if I thought you were going to be an accountant and file people's taxes, I'd tell you to go to Stanford. He said, but you're not. You're going to be a pro golfer. You're going to be one of the best golfers who ever lived. The reason these people are here today is I want them to hear it from the top, that their job is to help you in any way they can get through college and work with you around your golf schedule, that you are a golfer first, student second. And I mean, he was visibly moved by that. And then when we took him and showed him the facilities and all the other things that make UNLV golf great, he was in. And I at the end of the day, just like so many other coaches will tell you, it came down to mom, and she had her heart set on her son going to Stanford his whole life. That's where she wanted him to go. And she wasn't going to let him go to Vegas. There was just no way it was going to happen. I think we had dad. Earl loved us. And I think Tiger loved it in Vegas and still does. I mean, he's there all the time, but
yeah,
you know.
Wow. That's a pretty amazing story. Another one for Aggies that I think is hilarious. It's perfect. It's just the classic. You're going to hire a coach. What are you looking for in that coach? And this is back in the Big 12 days. Talk about the connection, the New Mexico connection to what you did at New Mexico that might have just pushed you over the top and thrust you to the front of that list and that conversation during the hiring process to A&M?
So, you know, when I took the job at New Mexico, Texas is obviously not in our conference and they're not in our region. But every time we would go to a tournament, people wanted to know how we did against Texas because John Fields had left New Mexico. So they wanted to beat him. Well, that put a chip on my shoulder. And so I got where, okay, we need to beat Texas. And so I got the hint and we were unbelievably successful against Texas with his old team. And so the last year of Coach Ellis's, they did a giant tournament for him at the Border Olympics in Laredo. And Jim Nance did a guest speaking thing to wish him well in retirement, and all the teams came. So Texas was there, we were there, and all the A&M staff came down for the retirement deal. And we just happened to win that tournament and beat Texas. They came in second and we beat them. And from that point forward, I was their guy, you know, so they wanted someone that wanted to beat Texas pretty bad, which I did. And then got here, you know, and I went crazy over the top wanting to beat Texas every time we played them. So it was a fun rivalry for quite a while.
And now you're at USC, where the greatest, one of the greatest football games ever between USC and Texas. So you will not be seeing any of those pictures in Heritage Hall, but
exactly.
How badass was that as a football fan?
Oh,
walking through there. I know I've heard stories about it, but that's got to be, that's why I don't understand how they don't just stay on top, because out on the West Coast, there's just nothing like that. And there's very little like that in college football.
You walk into Heritage Hall and it's just Heisman trophies in a big circle. And then all the different sports national championship, their most recent trophy is around in a circle. And then they have another room that has all of the national championship trophies stacked up basically on the wall. And it's probably 20-foot high ceilings. And on both walls, it's just covered in, I think they have 148 national championships or some ridiculous number. And so when you walk into those two rooms, just the history and the tradition and the, you can't say that you can't win there, right? That's, I think, when you walk in, you're like, man, this place is all about winning. And so that it's really, it was pretty impressive. And I was, every facility I walked into was very similar to here, you know, just championship caliber, first class. They don't build it and then have to want to redo it. So they build it right the first time and everything's really impressive.
Little known fact, USC was one of the schools that I seriously, I wasn't recruited for sports. I was wanting to study engineering, and it was A&M Texas. I thought about going home to New York and Columbia just to go back. I don't know. I would never would have done that, but just like you in that job, anywhere you go, you think about what might've been. What a weird move. I don't think I'd be doing the Columbia version of Texags, but maybe the USC version, because I almost, that was probably the out of state wild card for me. It was those four. And I think my dad just liked the idea of me maybe doing something that maybe he would have done, but
yeah.
So long story short, JT, that's my way of saying you can expect me out there, just like I'm sure you can expect many, many Aggies, your friends over, you know, the last two decades to come out and support you. And it's going to be fun to follow USC. I expect that we will see you at the Aggie Golf Invitational. So, I mean, we need. Are they going to let you back into that? And are you, and let me ask you that now, is that a tournament you're going to try to bring the Trojans to?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, I've always thought this, it's a great tournament to play in to prep you for the postseason, because traditions is so difficult. And, you know, usually there's some weather. And so that's what you're going to see at regionals and nationals. And, you know, I don't think there's any that would change any for a West Coast team, because you just don't know where you're going to get sent. You know, you have no idea where you're going to play your regionals. And so I like things that are tough and make it difficult on the guys and test them a little bit, especially at the end of the year.
Well, JT, it's been a blast. It's not just today, but again, for the, you know, since the early 2000s, and we're going to miss you, but we're going to stay in touch. And I mean, really looking forward to seeing what you're doing out there. And we're happy for you, man. We really are. I know everybody's giving you a hard time. And if people only knew the amount of crap that you've gotten in the last, not just in the last couple of weeks, but even going to California for quarantine, if people knew, they'd be like, why are these guys all so mean to each other? But even that's been fun. And I know certain ones of our friends probably ran you off, but we love you. We're going to miss you and we're excited for you. Well, so it's been fun. It's still going to be fun. So
I really appreciate that. And, you know, I can't wait for COVID to go away so you can come visit and hang out on the beach.
Oh, I can't wait. I might do what you did. And I might finally just cave in and load up Griffin here in the car and drive out there. That might be the play. If there's no football season, I will be loading up that Caldwell Country Tahoe and making sure they don't mind me putting that many miles on, because we are driving to California, me and the dog. So I hope y'all got room.
There you go. Come on over.
All right, buddy. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Luch.
Thanks, JT.
Bye-bye.